Playing a game called High Low. All you have to do is you have to tell me the three most expensive ones. The three most expensive ones. Would you like to hear about them first?
Sure.
All right, great to tell us about it.
All right, we haven't done this in a while, Brian.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a minute or two. Yep. High Low here on ESPN 1000 with Xander and Hanley. You want to start, my friend?
Sure. We talked about what a great day in baseball. October baseball was yesterday with one highlight after another, one stunning game after another.
One baseball game that went like 4 hours?
Yeah, one stunning result after another. It didn't even get into Alabama losing at Tennessee.
Yeah.
For the first time, I think, in 15 years, Tennessee found a way to beat the hated Nick Saban. But this, and I have to start this by my apologies. I have to send out heart and sincere felt apologies to Josh Whitman, the AD at Illinois. I thought he was out of his mind when he hired Brett Bielema. I thought, you're doing what? How's this going to work out? You know, after Lovey and the line I have, ILL, I used to say, yes, I am watching that stuff. But now it is ILL, INI, and they're 6-1, and they just beat the living daylights out of Minnesota, which is a pretty good college football team. And they're already bowl eligible, and they could win the West in the Big Ten because they've just beat Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota in consecutive games. And so Brett Bielema is getting it done, and I thought he would be a disaster, and so far so good. So
duly noted.
Okay, 26-14 they win. Okay, doesn't look like a rout. But here you go. High or low, Mr. Xander?
Yeah.
200 yards. That the Illini had more than 200 yards more or less than the Minnesota Golden Gophers. They outgained them by 200 yards. Higher or lower?
Is that high or low? I would say that is high.
It is low. 292 yards. The Illini, even though they had 26 points, 472 yards to Minnesota's 180. I mean,
that's a win. That is a win on top of a win.
I mean, the score doesn't reflect that kind of domination.
No.
They had time of possession 40 minutes out of a 60-minute game. Crazy.
No wonder you filed your apology publicly.
Oh, I mean,
is insane. No, it is insane. It's Illinois, really? Is this what's happening? Beat the Badgers, really? Okay.
And look, they have a place in my heart. My first beat at the Sun-Times was Illinois/Big Ten, and I covered John Makovic and Lou Henson, and they, you know, that was Jeff George. So they had a quarterback.
For you kids, look those people up.
Yeah, and there were some unbelievable games. I remember one at USC where Jeff George just absolutely won the game for the Illini, but football highlights down in Champaign, few and far between for decades. Yeah.
Wow.
You're
up. I'm stunned. I'm stunned at what Illinois has done and those stats, because you're right, that dominance does not get reflected in the score.
Should I do another Illinois one since we stay on topic? I have one more.
Sure. Okay. Here. You want to do it now, or you want me to jump in with mine?
Whatever you want, because this one's unbelievable, too.
Oh, no, you know what? Let's hear that while we're on the subject. Let's hear
Chase
you.
Brown, their stud running back, okay?
Uh-huh.
High or low? Did he have more than 25 carries or less than 25 carries in that big one yesterday?
In that all those yards. I would say he had less, so it's low.
He carried the ball 41 times. I mean, a day for a good running back is about 25 carries, right? And you hope he gets to 100 yards. 41 carries for 180 yards.
Yeah, that's.
As Bielema said, if there's a player that means more to his team than Chase Brown means to the Illini, he doesn't know who it is.
Wow, I love what's happening down there. I love what's happening. All right, so you're talking college football. I'm going to talk baseball. I know that I am a Sox fan, but you have to understand, when I was a kid, born on the north side, grew up on the south side, I had a certain allegiance to both. I'm a baseball fan, Chicago baseball fan. And growing up and watching the savior number 42, Bruce Sutter, was such a treat.
Mm.
And he passed away Thursday at the age of 69. He had he was in hospice. I had no idea he was in bad shape.
He had
cancer. So I want to send out a salute to Mr. Bruce Sutter, one of the best who have ever.
That split finger
fastball. He learned it from someone, and I had the name in front of me. Who did he learn that from?
A minor league pitching instructor, pitching coach in the system, and. I mean, he invented that pitch, and it was devastating, and it didn't come in at 105 miles an hour. It just dropped off the table. Yeah. It looked like it was going to be waist high, belt high, and it would just it'd be at your ankles when you were swinging it.
Yeah, it was just so much fun to watch. And in those years of watching the Cubs, those were tough years, but he was bright spot in an otherwise dark time.
Love that, man. Loved watching him. So love those late inning, and just he would come in and – it wasn't just a ninth inning,
guys. It was lights out. Okay, so here's something I want to run by you. Seven times he pitched 100 or more innings in a season for a reliever. Now, remember what's happening with relievers now. You come in for an inning. That's it.
You're the setup guy. Here's your eighth inning guy.
You're the closer guy, whatever. Yeah. You don't have much responsibility beyond one inning. Seven times he pitched 100 or more innings in a season. Is that high or low?
I'm going to say it was low because I remember games when I saw Wrigley, it seemed like he'd be out there for four innings.
No, it's actually high.
Ooh.
Yeah, five times. But still, that's respectable.
Remarkable. Yeah,
absolutely. All right, back to you, Brian.
Okay, don't pick up the South Bend Tribune if you're Marcus Freeman. A little troubled right there in South Bend and Irish land. No one saw this. Well, no one saw them losing at home to Marshall. We are Marshall.
Right.
But they're now 3-3. And yesterday...
I snicker for all my Notre Dame nutbag friends that just love them.
That's redundant. Yeah. If you went to Notre Dame, you're that guy, right? My brother graduated from there. So my dad died happy because he had nine kids. Irish Catholic, one of us had to go there, right? One of us had to get a degree from Notre Dame because he used to take us to South Bend to Notre Dame games when we were kids. And we had no connection to the school other than my dad really loved watching them, right?
Right.
Although I went to Fenwick and Johnny Latner went to Notre Dame and won the Heisman there. So that was Fenwick was kind of a feeder school back in the day. But that said, Marcus Freeman is mired in a little bit of difficulty, and he's getting roasted in the local paper today. So Stanford comes to town. That's a pretty good rivalry game, not exactly Notre Dame-USC. But it's a game that the Stanford fans travel for, and Notre Dame fans travel out to Palo Alto when they play out there.
Mm-hmm.
But here comes Stanford, and the Irish managed all of 14 points to the Cardinal. High or low, the Stanford defense was rated 75th in defense coming into that game. High or low?
That is... Now, okay, 75th. So I would say that was... too low of a rating.
Yes. They were the 111th rated defense, and you managed all of 14 points. They had lost 11 consecutive games.
Times are tough.
Times are tough if you're the Irish. And they're 3-3, and they've dropped two home games to absolute teams they either roll out of bed and beat. And that Stanford team comes in struggling, and you manage 14 points against a defense that's rated 111th. And 11th in the land.
Wow. Oh. Okay. All right, Dame fans. Wow. All right, back to Bruce Sutter, passing away at the age of 69 this past Thursday, a Cub Hero Hall of Fame pitcher. Threw more than one inning in 174 of his saves over his career. Is that high or low? Now, again, remember, reliever roles are very limited now. Setup, yep. Closer, as we talked about. Threw more than one inning in 174 of his saves career-wise.
And that was back in the day when starters could actually finish a game.
Yeah. I imagine that. Okay.
But I'm going to still say it was low.
Low, 188.
See?
No wonder why that man was in the Hall of Fame. Just incredible durability. And that pitch was just devastating. All right, back to you. I guess we're running short of time, so we'll accelerate this. Yeah.
Let's get your last one, and we'll move on to Jesse.
All right. MLB Cy Young Award winners that were relievers only. In the history of the major leagues, MLB Cy Young Award winners that were relievers only. I have the number at 5. Is that high or low, Brian Henley?
I'm going to say that's high. In the history of baseball, that would seem to be low, but I'm going to say it's high.
It is low.
Whoa.
9.
Wow.
Yes. 9 of those. And that is pretty remarkable. I had the list in front of me. Raleigh Fingers was on the list, of course. But 9 of them. 9 of them relievers only, Cy Young Award winners. All right, we're going to take a break, come back. We've got to catch up with Jesse Rogers here, our baseball guy on ESPN 1000. We'll be right back.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago.
This is Xander and Hanley on Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome in. It's ESPN 1000. Time to talk to our baseball guy, Jesse Rogers, joining us on the hotline. Boy, I'll tell you, yesterday, baseball, Major League Baseball playoff action, so boring. Jesse?
Kidding.
Yeah. That's dry humor.
Sarcasm.
Right there, Jesse.
I can't tell with you sometimes.
Yeah, Xander. I know. That's why when I heard you say nothing, it's like, I have to jump in here and save him.
I'm so used to you and your dry humor with the White Sox, and it's never very funny, actually.
I know. It hurts. It hurts, yeah. Jesse. Yeah. That's how I deal with it. But no, yesterday was just nonstop hits. I mean, not in the real sense, just great games. It was, as I was telling Brian, I was out with my son. I tuned in, and it's like, is that 16? Could that be the 16th inning? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's amazing. I did that Cleveland game with Oscar Gonzalez when he hit the walk-off on the 15th, and he hits the walk-off again yesterday, and then the Jeremy Pena. I mean, how about these rookies doing it? The one thing is, I think, everyone's asking about, you know, Dodgers got upset, the Mets got upset. I don't think there are upsets at this point when there's a best of 3 and best of 5. I'm going to be adamant about that. Like, really, anybody can beat anybody. We've known this forever. Mm-hmm. Why do we get all caught up in 100-win team lost? Yeah, because it's best of 5. And there's a lot of things that go into it. First of all, are you healthy on the mound is number 1, right? The Braves weren't healthy on the mound. That's a big one. The Dodgers weren't necessarily healthy on the mound. Do you have a bullpen, right? That's important, too, in the playoffs. Yep. It just is.
Especially when you go 18 innings, yeah.
Yeah, the Dodgers don't. The Yankees don't. This is why the one team that is living up to what I think is the Astros. I think they're going to blow everybody out. I think they're going to win the World Series.
Yep.
All these other teams, you know, upstarts, great, awesome. But to me, there really aren't upsets in the postseason. They're all good teams, and it's a short series, so really anybody can beat anybody. And if you have any problem on your pitching staff, and I just saw it up close, it was in Philadelphia with the Braves and Phillies, the other team's going to take advantage. Mm-hmm. Max Fried has like walking mono. Spencer Strider had an oblique, and Charlie Morton came out after 2 innings because he got hit. I mean, that's it. Series over, you know?
And that yesterday, Real Muto's inside the park home run is like the 8th headline of the day, right?
Yeah. Right.
And the day before, Reese Hoskins, they intentionally walk to get to him, and he says, thank you very much, and just smashes it into the seats and slams that bat, like, try that again, because he's been struggling. But good Lord, Jesse, 18-inning game, great defense, great bullpens, obviously, and then the rookie walk-off home run, and then the Padres, and you know, knocking off their hated rival in the Dodgers, and then the Cleveland Guardians had a 4% win probability at that point in the game, and they find a way. It's just that day was epic for me as a baseball fan.
Oh, totally. And you know, a lot of times we watch the playoffs and we say, what does this mean, right? And I think one thing, especially if we talk about the Cubs and Sox, is I think, and this is even before we get to the rule changes, but add the rule changes in, I think being a diverse team is going to be important. And I don't mean ethnically. I mean how you win games is going to be important in terms of, okay, can you hit the home run? Can you play a little small ball? And even the Phillies, I saw Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber bunt a couple times. We've seen Cleveland go deep. We've seen Cleveland use the home run. We've seen Cleveland go with five whatever singles in a row in the ninth inning or whatever it was. Like, I think being dynamic and diverse is going to be a thing again in baseball, and it wasn't for a long time. You absolutely do need to hit the home runs, though. We know that. You got to have that. Both the Cubs and Sox were a little bit light in that area this year. But I like the idea of, like, winning different ways. And we're seeing, I think, a few teams prove you can do that. Phillies and Cleveland come to mind.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I would agree with you. And to show you or to illustrate, because I agree with you about the Astros, they're an absolute wall. This whole Cleveland thing is, you know, it's kind of hard to root against. Root for the Yankees if you're a Chicago fan, or maybe you don't have a problem with that. But to see what Cleveland's doing and the way they walked off last night, it's such a great Cinderella story. Young guys, low payroll, all that. The Astros, whoever meets the Astros, I mean, that's the brick wall. And, yeah, and they're not going to get over that. And to illustrate my point, imagine this. The Astros just have so much talent. You let a Carlos Correa walk. Because you have a Pena, and this kid is good,
and their players are ready when they come up. It's a machine. It's the Dodgers of the American League right now, and they're so balanced. And that's, I mean, talk about winning different ways. They can do it with pitching. They can do it with hitting. They can do it from the right side, from the left side, with defense. That really is a complete team. I don't know, about midway through the year, I just started to get on their bandwagon. In terms of winning the World Series, I'm not going to get off of it. But I picked Cleveland to beat the Yankees. Buster and Olney and I from ESPN, you know, we both did. I mean, I think when you're a one-trick pony, and I think the Yankees kind of are, you're beatable. It's just a matter of if it was going to be a home run hitting contest or not, because we know the Yankees would come down to, you know, would beat them in that. But obviously it's proving not to be. And when you have a shaky bullpen, you can let a team back in. So we're jumping all around here, but you know, one other thing I've noticed is, look, there was a big line between the great teams and the really bad teams this year. I feel like there were a couple in between teams, the Cubs, the White Sox, the Diamondbacks were a little bit in between, but there were really, you know, it was, you were really good or you were really bad. And that's why, again, I don't think there's many real upsets in this thing. The Phillies were really good. Maybe, okay, 87 doesn't sound like a lot of wins, but remember, most of that bad stuff happened pre-Girardi firing. So, like, I just feel like there are a lot of good teams, and none of these are real upsets to me in my world, at least.
And that's why I'm rooting for the Padres, because small market team doing big things and trying. Anytime there's a talent out there that, you know, Soto, let's go get him. Going back to getting the Yu Darvish and picking up that contract that the wealthy Cubs were shedding. And it's finally working out for him. I don't know that it sustains itself to a World Series title, but they just wanted to get by the Dodgers one time, and they finally did that. And can you believe Aaron Judge? He finally hits a tying home run, game tying home run yesterday, but he's getting booed in the Bronx.
Yeah.
is there they don't deserve him. I think he needs to be in Chicago.
Is there a possibility that money, if it's anywhere near equal, he just says, I'll go somewhere else because, you know, really, you're booing me after 62 home runs?
I don't think so. I think they understand the market there, you know, especially if you've been drafted and you grew up there. I don't think this is going to really sour him. I don't know him well enough to say that for sure. I just kind of know how players think. They live with it. But let me speaking of that, let me give you a quote from Nick Castellanos, who's a great quote machine, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking about him in the Philly fan base, and I will tell you, and I tweeted out this quote from Schwarber talking about how good Philly fans were. Citizens Bank Park was electric. It really was. Now, I think part of it is when you don't have playoff baseball for a decade, people get hungry. And this team was on the road for 25 straight days, played their first round on the road, played their first two games of the next round on the road. So finally, you know, it was a built-up excitement. That place was rocking. And I asked Castellanos about Eagle fans. He's like, I'm just beginning to understand this fan base. He said, I see it even with the Eagles. And remember, they're 5-0. Things are going great, but if someone drops a sure-handed touchdown, they're raining boos like someone just kicked your dog. He's like, but there's good and bad in that. They're passionate when you're, you know, bad, but when you're good and we're rolling, and he's like, there's more good than bad in that. So you have to remember with some of these passionate fan bases, I put the Cubs and Sox in that group as well, you get the bad, but you also get the really good, and I don't think it's going to impact Judge. A guy like Castellanos, though, like a newcomer, like you've got to get used to that. And he's a guy that rides a roller coaster much more than, let's say, Schwarber, who's a newcomer there. So I think Castellanos had to get used to it a little bit. But I think guys that are drafted by these passionate teams understand it as they grow up in the organization.
To your point, the old Veterans Stadium, the story went that they used to have a sitting judge on Eagles game days down in somewhere in the bowels of the stadium because they were arresting so many people, and he would just dispatch cases. They wouldn't even take them downtown.
There's no time they for that. There's too many.
They knew there'd be like 200 people in handcuffs, and so he'd be sitting down there and, you know, okay, you're fined, or, you know, you're going to we'll continue.
I just remember the story of getting pelted, the players getting pelted with batteries.
Oh, boy.
Ugh. Just, you know, nasty.
It's funny talking to players, and it's secondary to money, but it is number two, like wanting to be in a place that brings that energy. Harper talked a lot about it yesterday, just the idea of the blue collar Philadelphia thing, and his dad taught him that. And, you know, look, you're going to sign where the money is, but if you have other reasons, that's part of it. I talked to Dansby Swanson, who's going to be a free agent. This guy probably, I can't say more than anyone else, but he wants to win so bad, and it's all he talked about. And they just won last year, and he's still, like, devastated they were behind in the series. He's like, man, money is important, but I got to go to a place that wants to win. And, you know, you bring up the Padres, Brian. It's evident. Look, they're spending all this money. They trade for Soto. They sign Tatis. Now, that's actually the one team that has surprised me. I didn't think they'd have enough offense to survive, and they've won two rounds. What they did against Scherzer really – opened my eyes, so who knows how far they can go. But and that's going back to what I said about the haves and the have-nots. It does feel like half the league really wants to win, and you know the other half is the Pittsburgh Pirates, right? It's just you know the teams that don't want to win, and you kind of realize the teams that are kind of going for it, you know?
You know, Jesse, Brian said he's rooting for the Padres. I was too, and I really figured out a deeper meaning to why I'm rooting for the Padres is because that – what they've done down there, if anything, is going to force the hand of Jerry Reinsdorf to do business like it's actually 2022. Maybe that scenario might, if he actually wants to
win. Why San Diego?
Because of the money that they have spent and knowing what they're just putting it all out on the table.
Well, when I remember going on with Sylvie a couple of weeks ago, is he did a rant on Jerry Reinsdorf, and I said, this is the one thing I've known about Jerry forever. He's not going to spend money to make money. And that's kind of what you're describing about the Padres. They're spending money to make money. That place is packed. Gaslight District is going crazy. They're going crazy down there. It just, this energy is just alive in San Diego like it is in some of these other towns. And, you know, as much as the White Sox did draw, they didn't draw 35,000. Like, it wasn't going crazy every night where Jerry was bringing, you know, printing money, and he's willing to pay for it, right? So he's not the type to spend money to make money. Well, he hasn't been throughout his career.
Anytime, you know, maybe he would see that and say, okay, maybe it's time to readjust my thinking, but you can't teach old dogs new tricks necessarily.
Yeah, and I was told that, I was told to your point, Jesse, because I wondered, you know, as the chairman of a team with many, many investors, he's not even a majority investor, but he's the chairman, he's the boss. Why wouldn't you want to have 40,000 people showing up every day and eating those concessions and drinking the beer and paying for the parking? And I was told, you're missing the point. All those investors know that their money comes when the franchise is sold. And it's like a long-term government bond that they've been holding for 30 years. And if you got in on the ground floor when they bought the team for $20 million, that team's going to be worth well over $2 billion when it's sold. And that's when they get their payoff. So there's not heat on the chairman to spend money to make money, because that we know how much franchises are worth these days.
And it kind of applies to the Bears as well. I mean, the monthly checks, the owners or partners, whoever, that pales in comparison to what they'll get when they sell the team. That's the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, not what they make every year in salary or dividends or anything like that. So, right, I mean, it doesn't necessarily pay to increase the payroll all the way to the, you know, max type money, because you're not getting it back in any way until you sell the team. And it's not worth as much when you have a high payroll anyway.
Right. And that's the difference between what we want to see as fans and what people want to see as business.
Yeah.
Businessmen and women.
Any updates on the White Sox in terms of manager search?
Last few days. Now, with the series of a couple series ending, we're sort of in between. We might hear some news in the next 24 to 48 hours. for example, I was down in Atlanta. I was talking to Ron Washington. And he's like, well, I don't think every team has a little different, you know, process in terms of you're in the playoffs. And it sounded like from Ron Washington, he's like, when we're out, and he didn't, he meant either in between rounds or completely out, I'll get back on the phone with some teams. So in his case, I think it picks up again now. Now, the White Sox did interview Joe Espada in the middle of their playoff year, but I feel like Houston's like, oh, it's the division series. Come on, you can, you know, like it's small potatoes for them. They're kind of used to this every year. They're getting picked off front office guys. So I haven't heard anything new in the last few days. I do know that the interview with Espada went well, but that's not saying he's going to get hired. Mm-hmm. I put Ron Washington is not necessarily any sort of a favorite in that world. I'd put Espada, you know, closer to the top of the list than anyone else I've heard. I'm not saying it's going to be Espada, but we're still a little bit early in the process. I'm not sure they're ready to say these three are finalists and we're ready to go.
And before we let you go, you had mentioned Martinez from the Nationals. Any word that he'll actually get talked to?
No, I've not heard any traction. Not heard any traction.
Yeah, I thought it was a good idea, though.
Yeah. Maybe it's still out there, but right now those bench coach type guys are getting the calls and the interviews. The Ron Washingtons, the Matt Quatraro,
Sandy Alomar.
Sandy Alomar has not been called. He has not been called. So Walt Weiss has not been called. Talked to him for a little bit, but yeah, I don't know. I think maybe Alomar's time has passed. I'm not sure why exactly. He's under Francona, good organization. Forward-thinking organization,
yeah.
Some ties to the White Sox, but not in their inner family, like you know, Han was kind of referencing. So I'm a little surprised by Sandy, but that was as of a few days ago. Again, things may change at the beginning of the week here.
All right, Jesse Rogers, thanks for joining us. As always, a pleasure to talk to you about baseball. Who do you got real quick, Phillies and Padres?
Boy, that's tough. I'm gonna say the Phillies. I guess I spent time with them. A little biased. I just think they have a little bit more punch. I still wonder about San Diego's offense through two more rounds. I'll say the Phillies in six or seven.
Okay. All right. You heard it from Jesse Rogers. Thanks, buddy. Always a pleasure.
You got the great work.
Be well.
All right. 312-332-3776. We are here until noon. We're the postmen. We bring in the stories that,
we read the post, so you don't have to.
You didn't know that you needed to hear. So we'll get to that. We've got some Twitter polls up. We'll wrap up before we get out of here at noon on ESPN 1000.
There are millions of places to get ESPN Chicago. There are smart speakers, phones, podcasts, standing in front of the old National Bank studio on State Street.
Hello.
There's Twitch.tv, FMHD, and of course, the original ESPN 1000 on the AM dial. We're glad you found us. And so are these very patient hosts, Mark Zander and Brian Hanley.
Wait, oh yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait,
wait, hey, 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 Mr. Postman.
All right, we read the stories in the New York Post, so you don't have to. Giving you the stories you didn't know you needed to hear in your life. I'm Xander. That's Brian Hanley. I'm going to start out today. Brian and Jake. A South Carolina man. Now, follow the details. Ceremony here. And not many explanations. A South Carolina man stole the cremated remains of his ex-girlfriend's mother to sell so he could buy heroin. Okay. Makes sense so far? No, not really. Jackson Rutland, 19, texted his ex-girlfriend around 5:40 on Wednesday morning and told her he had taken her mother's ashes from her home in Warrensville, wherever that is, and while she was visiting a friend. When the woman returned home, she found the rear door busted into and the home ransacked. She told police she even found a little smattering of ashes in the living room there. Turns out Rutland, 19, who stole said ashes, allegedly swiped the remains to sell to buy heroin, according to the warrant. What the warrant left out is how you actually sell somebody's ashes to make enough money to buy drugs.
What market? I mean, if they were celebrity ashes.
Yeah, if they're celebrity ashes, but how do you prove it? Do you have an ashes validator?
But I don't think the ex-girlfriend's mom was a celebrity.
She was not a celebrity. Perhaps, I'm sure, loved. Well-loved within the family. Yeah. But, yeah, you know what?
Was
going to
be a ransom? A ransom situation?
Well, I don't understand. Here's the thing. If you are going to commit a crime, Think it through.
Well, he's 19. He's on heroin.
And, well, that's the problem.
Strike one and strike two,
all in the right way. So this brilliant youngster thought, hey, if I steal, Ashley's mom's ashes, it's ironic her name's Ashley.
That
I can sell them to somebody that would pay a lot for them so I can finance my drug habit.
Unless he was going to, cut out the letters from a newspaper and tape a ransom demand.
Those are always my favorite. That's craft project. I love that.
You want to see mom's ashes again, you got to come up with, I don't know how much heroin goes for.
I'm not sure of the market value for heroin right now, but I'm still pretty certain that that's a pretty hard thing to sell. Some things are easy to sell.
Is that considered kidnapping if you do ask for ransom? And mom's not breathing.
I think kidnapping ends when the person is not living.
Okay.
The official term of kidnapping.
God bless.
So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, how about good old Robert Kraft at 81 getting married to 47-year-old Dr. Dana Bloomberg? 81 years old, and he's going walking down the aisle again, and what an aisle it was because he's a billionaire. So some fancy place in Tribeca. He has about 250 guests. And, of course, Elton John was there. John Bon Jovi was there. Tom Brady was there, adding another layer to the whole.
Isn't it ironic, don't you think, that Tom Brady returns to have a mediocre season and he loses his model wife because he came back?
Page Six has been reporting. They were the first ones to report in the New York Post about trouble in paradise with Tom and Giselle. And so he shows up Friday in Tribeca. They're playing in Pittsburgh today, right? So I guess maybe just met the team yesterday there. But Tom Brady stag at a wedding. So obviously there is some trouble there. He supposedly hung out with John Bon Jovi, Andrew Bledsoe. Elton John played the Rocket Man, he performed there. It was star studded because, again, he's a billionaire.
Robert Kraft, sure. He can afford star studded.
Yeah. And the fact that he's 81 and he decides that, billionaire 81 year olds.
Yeah, who decided what here?
and speaking about deciding things, Page Six reporting that if, in fact, they are breaking up, Tom and Giselle, no one wants to see that because they were the picture-perfect couple.
Yeah.
Their assets, he's reportedly worth about $330 million through his salaries and endorsements and everything he's made in the NFL.
He's going to get some alimony, isn't he?
She's worth $400 million.
Yeah. Right.
Supermodel.
Yep.
That's almost $1 billion is going to be splitting up. But you hate to see him showing up stag at a wedding. But what a wedding it was good old Robert Kraft.
I think,
Kraft.
Too, to add on to that, his wife passed away, Myra Kraft, in 2011. So he waited a while. We can give him credit there. But, he remarried.
Wow.
So there's that.
Yeah, there's that. And this might be the last wife, but maybe not.
Well, he's 45?
You never
know. Oh, Robert Kraft.
Robert Kraft.
Tom's probably going to go down the aisle again.
I'm sure he will. Yeah. But, Kraft, this may not be the last marriage.
No, he just might go down to one of those spas in Florida again.
Yeah. Oh, geez. There's a rim shot in there somewhere. All right, Jake Cantu's got, he is our postman to wrap things up today.
Alrighty, y'all. A man shoved 8-inch deodorant can up his butt.
Oh, you just said that for three weeks. So, like, it happens every day.
You just gotta peel the band-aid right off. Just pull it right off. Yeah. Man shoved 8-inch deodorant can up his butt, left it there for 3 weeks. He tried to use a deodorant and ended up with, quote, anti-pusperant.
Oh,
a little play on words. 27-year-old man in India had to be hospitalized after allegedly, obviously, shoving the canister. It's a canister, not a stick.
That sounds even more hurtful. Canister.
And there's a graphic video too.
No, thanks.
So many questions, like the Seinfeld
so
episode.
So many questions and so little answers.
George's dad sat on silly Jerry and had to go to the emergency room. You know, he was making pasta figures of people. How do you sit on an 8-inch can? I mean, this
very
had to be intentional.
Carefully. Carefully.
This had to be intentional.
See, like, I feel like I'm Ed McMahon right now. Very carefully, Johnny.
Well, not only that, it was there for 20 days, guys. Yeah. And
maneuver? How do you go out and get coffee or go for a walk?
Yeah,
miles on your Fitbit. How do you get those steps in with that?
Did he not know it? Did he need?
did he not know it?
Did the doctor say, "Well, the first time I can get you in, so to speak, is at like 20 days from now, and
get you in. I don't care what you have put up your butt. Sorry, we can't get you in."
According to the story, it looks like the unfortunate fellow wasn't able to relieve himself, and that's what caused him to go to the ER eventually.
Well, you think?
Good Lord.
Simple math, people. Simple math.
There's
if you obstruct the way, you're not going to be able to take care of business.
There's not enough raisin bran in the world that would have gotten
it. No, ain't going to knock that free.
He's happy and healthy now. Happy to report that. And no more can up his butt.
Good, good. I hope he learned his lesson. That is it for the postmen this week. I think that's got to be it. That's it. I don't want to hear any more. And I'm not watching that video even during the break, Jake. I'm not going to do it. We're back to wrap things up out of here at noon. We've got a Twitter poll. We've got a couple calls to take real quick, too. We'll get to those here on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back to Xander and Hanley on ESPN Chicago.
Chicago's home for sports.
All right, we're out of here at noon. Bucks and Steelers. Follow us here on ESPN 1000. We're going to wrap up the polls, Twitter polls, in just a moment. Couple of phone calls to take. Thanks for hanging on. Mo in Frankfurt. You want to talk about the White Sox right quick. Hey, Mo. What's up?
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Great show, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you for this Sunday morning, man. It's amazing. I love it. But let me tell you something. With the White Sox, come on. Look, let me tell you. Oh, come on. Why do we have so many DHs on our team?
That's a big problem.
We don't have players.
Yeah. That's a big problem, and that has to get solved off season. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are we gonna do? Like, I know Abreu is gonna be gone, right?
Yeah.
That's my favorite player.
Yeah.
So Vaughn goes to first.
You're gonna put Vaughn in first.
First base.
Okay,
that's
what about
just
Sheets?
Natural. Sheets is probably. You know, I've seen Sheets make some steps in growth in right field. Now, you know, would they put him in left field? Probably a little less demanding.
Aloy will DH.
He's going to have to. Now, I know the kid said he wants to play the field, but it's not really up to him, and we've seen him demonstrate how he hurts himself in the field.
And we have to protect him from himself. Eloy stays in the batter box.
You're
not going to put Eloy in. And then what about the Grandal? What's happening to him?
Oh, boy.
Like, you know, that's me.
I mean, the guy's good. If you want to hit or you want to walk, okay.
Well, that was last year, Mo. Yeah. That's the problem.
We only have
the most recent sample size. And although it wasn't huge because he was out a lot, he walked and hit last year. That wasn't this year. And that's the problem.
Right.
And if anybody got a goodbye buyout, which I'm not suggesting is even possible because we owe him so much money, and we're not going to be able to dump him off on somebody else.
I would
say it's Yasmani. And there are a lot of people that still think he's worth something, but boy, he has to come back and perform a miracle for me to get on his
side. Thanks, Mo.
Yeah, thank you, Mo. Yeah,
I love you guys.
Thanks,
thank you,
buddy.
Ben.
Yeah. We've got Ron on the south side. Let's get to him before we wrap things up. What up, Ron? You're on ESPN 1000.
Love you guys. The most amazing thing I've seen in watching baseball 55 years is Bruce Sutter's split fingers.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Ron, I'm with you.
You could not hit it. The only thing close to behind it, I think it might have been 96, was when Pedro was throwing the changeup. Just nothing like, okay. And last guy, what I loved yesterday, I was watching the Yankees in Cleveland. What was the contrast? You know, the Yankees was lying on hitting the home run. And Cleveland hitting the singles. This is it. You can win with different types of offense. But when you get to the playoffs like this, it's defense and pitching, and particularly a bullpen. And last year I was going for Atlanta when Atlanta was out 10.5 games in June, and they brought Michael Harris Jr. up, some of those young players. So that's why I put them for them. They're a good organization. So love the show, guys.
You're the best, Ron. Great for you. Southside Ron.
Appreciate the phone call as always, buddy. All right, Brian, you had a couple of Twitter polls that you threw up on ESPN 1000 on Twitter. You want to roll them out, and we'll have Jake pay them off.
Yeah, we didn't even get into Bulls conversations, but the season starts for real on Wednesday, and the over-under on Bulls wins total, 41.5. Which way are you going, over or under? And we don't know if Lonzo Ball is going to be available or when or if. Or Jake, how did that turn out?
Everyone said over, 72%.
Ooh, and you know, that is a contrarian in me. That means it's going to be under.
Okay.
It's just, yeah, if everyone leaves one way, go the other way.
Lay your money down accordingly. All right, what's your other one?
2-4 Bears. How'd they get to this point in the season? What's the most responsible for not only the losing record, but how they've been losing? Is it offense, defense, coaching, or the general manager? And if you had to pick one, Jake, what would you pick? What would they pick?
They would pick the offense at 70%, and then coming next, the GM at 14%.
Wow, okay. Well, I think appropriately it is the offense, and I'm glad that they didn't go right to Ryan Poles. Hey, real quick before we go, and we've got to get to that Bucks-Steelers game. It was Fred Martin, Cubs pitching coach, that taught Bruce Sutter the split-finger fastball that landed him with 300 saves and into the Hall of Fame. And
I used to love watching those games where, you know, the Cardinals would have Al Hrabowski marching around the mound between pitches.
Oh, yeah, slamming his
slamming the ball in his glove, and here's Bruce just coming out and throwing this pitch no one can hit.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, have a great day, Brian. Always a pleasure. See you back here next Sunday on ESPN 1000.
Thanks, guys.